New Orleans, Louisiana, July 29th, 1970. 12. I love you. They are in New Orleans when he says it, dining in a hidden bar in the French Quarter, one of his many installations. Addie shakes her head, amazed the words do not turn to ash in his mouth. Do not pretend that this is love. Annoyance flashes across Luke's face. What is love, then? Tell me. Tell me your heart doesn't flutter when you hear my voice, that it doesn't ache when you hear your name on my lips.
It's my own name I ache for, not your lips.
The edge of his mouth curls up, his eyes now emerald, a brightness born of pleasure.
Once, perhaps, he says, but now it's more.
She is afraid that he is right. And then he sets a box before her. It is simple and black, and if Addie were to reach for it, it would be small enough to fit within her palm. But she doesn't, not at first.
What is it? She asks.
A gift.
Still, she does not take it.
Honestly, Adeline, he says, sweeping the box from the table. It will not bite.
He opens it and sets it back before her. Inside, there is a simple brass key, and when she asks him where it leads, he says,
home.
Addie stiffens. She has not had a home, not since Villon, has never, in fact, had a place of her own, and she is almost grateful, before she remembers, of course, that he is the reason why.
Do not mock me, Luke.
I am not mocking you, he says.
He takes her hand and leads her through the quarter to a place at the end of Bourbon Street, a yellow house with a balcony and windows as tall as doors. She slides the key into the lock and listens to the heavy sound of the turn and realizes if it belonged to Luke instead of her, the door would simply open. And suddenly, the brass key feels real and solid in her hand, a treasured thing. The door swings open onto a house with high ceilings and wooden floors, with furniture and closets and spaces to be filled. She steps out onto the balcony, the layered sounds of the quarter rising to meet her on the humid air. Jazz spills through the streets, crashing, overlapping, a chaotic melody, changing and alive.
It is yours, says Luke. A home.
And the old warning sounds deep in the marrow of her bones. But these days, it is a shrinking beacon, a lighthouse viewed too far from port. He pulls her back against him. And Addie notices again the perfect way they fit together, as if he were made for her. Which, of course, he was. This body, this face, these features made to make her feel at ease.
Let's go out, he says.
Addie wants to stay in, to christen the house, but he says there will be time, there will always be time. And for once, she doesn't dread the idea of forever. For once, the days and nights don't drag, but race ahead. She knows that whatever this is, it will not last. It cannot last. Nothing ever does. But in the moment, she is happy. They make their way through the quarter, arm in arm, and Luke lights a cigarette, and when she tells him it's bad for his health, he lets out a breathy, noiseless laugh, smoke pouring between his lips. Her steps slow before a shop window. The store is closed, of course, but even through the darkened glass, she can see the leather jacket, black with silver buckles, draped over a mannequin. Luke's reflection shimmers behind her as he follows her gaze.
It is summer, he says.
It won't always be.
Luke smooths his hands over her shoulders, and she feels the soft leather settling against her skin, the mannequin in the window now bare,
and tries not to think of all the years she went without, forced to suffer through the cold, of all the times she had to hide and fight and steal. She tries not to think of them, but she does. They are halfway back to the yellow house when Luke peels away.
I have work to do, he says. Go on home.
Home. The word rattles through her chest as he walks away. But she does not go. She watches Luke round the corner and cross the street, and then she lingers in the shadow as he approaches a shop with a luminescent palm painted on the door. An older woman stands on the sidewalk, closing up, her frame bent over a ring of keys, a large bag drooping from one elbow. She must hear him coming because she murmurs something to the dark, something about closing, something about another day, and then she turns and sees him. In the glass of the shop window, Addie sees Luke, too, not as he is to her, but as he must appear to the woman in the doorway. He has kept those dark curls, but his face is leaner, sharper in a wolfish way, his eyes deep-set, his limbs too thin to be human.
A deal is a deal,
he says, the words bending on the air.
And it is done.
Addie watches, expecting the woman to beg, to run, but she sets her bag down on the ground and lifts her chin.
A deal is a deal, she says, and I am tired.
And somehow, this is worse, because Addie understands, because she is tired too. And as she watches, the darkness comes undone again. It has been more than 100 years since Addie last saw the truth of him, the roiling night with all its teeth. Only this time, there is no rending, no tearing, no horror. The darkness simply folds around the old woman like a storm, blotting out the light. Addie turns away. She goes back to the yellow house on Bourbon Street and pours herself a glass of wine, crisp and cold and white. It is blisteringly hot. The balcony doors are flung open to ease the summer night. She is leaning on the iron rail when she hears him arrive, not on the street below, as a courting lover might, but in the room behind her. And when his arms drift around her shoulders, Addie remembers the way he held the woman in the doorway, the way he folded around her, swallowing her whole. New York City, July 30th, 2014. 13. Luke's mood lifts a little as they walk. The night is warm, the moon barely a crescent overhead. His head falls back and he inhales, breathing in the air as if it were not ripe with summer heat, too many people in too little space. How long have you been here? She asks.
I come and go, he says, but she has learned to read the space between his words and guesses he has been in New York almost as long as she has, lurking like a shadow at her back.
She doesn't know where they are going, and for the first time she wonders if Luke does either, or if he is simply walking, trying to put space between them and the end of their meal. But as they make their way uptown, she feels time folding around them, and she does not know if it's his magic or her memory, but with each passing block, she is storming from him down the Seine. He is leading her away from the sea. She is following him in Florence. They are side by side in Boston and arm in arm on Bourbon Street. They are here together in New York, and she wonders what would have happened if he hadn't said the word, if he hadn't tipped his hand, if he hadn't ruined everything.
The night is ours, he says, turning toward her, and his eyes are bright again. Where shall we go?
Home, she thinks, though she cannot say it. She looks up at the skyscrapers, surging to either side. Which one, she wonders, has the best view? After a moment,
Luke smiles, flashing teeth, and says, "Follow me." Over the years, Addie has learned many of the city's secrets, but here is one she did not know. It resides not underground, but on a roof. 84 stories up, reached by a pair of elevators, the first one nondescript and rising only to the 81st floor. The second, a direct replica of Rodin's Gates of Hell, with its writhing bodies clawing to escape, takes you the rest of the way. If you have a key. Luke draws the black card from his shirt pocket and slides it into a yawning mouth along the elevator's frame. "Is this one of yours?" she asks as the doors slide open.
"Nothing is really mine," he says by way of answer as they step inside.
It is a short ascent, three brief floors, and when it stops, the doors open onto an uninterrupted view of the city. The bar's name winds in black letters at her feet. The Low Road. Addie rolls her eyes.
"Was perdition taken?"
"Perdition," he says, eyes sparkling with mischief, "is a different kind of club."
The floors are bronze, the railings glass, and the ceiling open to the sky, and people mill on velvet sofas and dip their feet in shallow pools and linger along the balconies that ring the roof, admiring the city.
"Mr. Green," says the hostess, "welcome back."
"Thank you, Renee," he says smoothly. "This is Adeline. Give her anything she wants."
The hostess looks to her, but there is no compulsion in her eyes, no sense that she has been enchanted, only the cooperation of an employee, one very good at her job. Addie asks for the most expensive drink, and Renee grins at Luke. "You've found yourself a match."
"I have," he says, resting his hand on the small of Addie's back as he guides her forward.
She quickens her step until it falls away and weaves through the milling crowd to the glass rail, looking out over Manhattan. There are no stars visible, of course, but New York rolls away to every side, its own galaxy of light. Up here, at least, she can breathe. It is the easy laughter of the crowd, the ambient noise of people enjoying themselves, so much nicer than the stifled quiet of the empty restaurant, the cloistered silence of the car. It is the sky opening above her, the beauty of the city to every side, and the fact that they are not alone. Renee returns with a bottle of champagne, a visible film of dust coating the glass. "Dom Perignon, 1959. She explains, holding the bottle out for inspection. "From your private case, Mr. Green." Luke waves his hand, and she opens the bottle, pouring two flutes, the bubbles so small they look like flecks of diamond in the glass. Addie sips, savors the way it sparkles on her tongue. She scans the crowd, filled with the kinds of faces you would recognize, even though you're not sure where you've seen them. Luke points them out to her. Those senators and actors, authors and critics, and she wonders if any of them have sold their soul, if any of them are about to. Addie looks down into her glass, the bubbles still rising smoothly to the surface, and when she speaks, the words are barely more than a whisper, the sound stolen by the chattering crowd, but she knows he is listening, knows he can hear her.
"Let him go, Luke."
His mouth tightens a fraction.
"Adeline," he warns.
"You told me you would listen."
"Fine."
He leans back against the rail and spreads his arms.
"Tell me, what do you see in him, this latest human lover?"
Henry Strauss is thoughtful and kind, she wants to say. He is clever and bright, gentle and warm. He is everything you're not. But Addie knows she must tread lightly.
"What do I see in him?" she says. "I see myself. Not who I am now, perhaps, but who I was the night you came to rescue me.
Luke scowls.
Henry Strauss wanted to die. You wanted to live. You were nothing alike.
It's not that simple,
isn't it?
Addie shakes her head. You see only flaws and faults, weaknesses to be exploited. But humans are messy, Luke. That is the wonder of them. They live and love and make mistakes, and they feel so much. And maybe I am no longer one of them.
The words tear through her as she says them, because she knows this much is true, for better or worse.
But I remember, she presses on. I remember what it's like, and Henry is
lost.
He is searching, she counters, and he will find his way if you let him.
If I let him, says Luke, he would have leapt off a roof.
You don't know that, she says. You never will, because you intervened.
I am in the business of souls, Adeline, not second chances.
And I am begging you to let him go. You will not give me mine, so give me his instead.
Luke exhales and sweeps his hand across the roof.
Choose someone, he says.
What?
He turns her to face the crowd.
Choose a soul to take his place. Pick a stranger. Damn one of them instead.
His voice is low and smooth and certain.
There is always a cost,
he says gently.
A price must be paid. Henry Strauss bartered his own soul. Would you sell someone else's to have it back?
Addie stares out at the crowded roof, the faces she recognizes and the ones she doesn't, young and old, together and alone. Are any innocent? Are any cruel? Addie does not know if she can do it, until her hand drifts up, until she points to a man in the crowd, heart plunging through her stomach as she waits for Luke to let go of her, to step forward and claim his price. But Luke doesn't move. He only laughs.
My Adeline,
he says, kissing her hair.
You have changed more than you think.
She feels dizzy and ill as she twists to face him.
No more games, she says.
All right,
he says, just before he pulls her into the dark. The roof drops away and the void surges up around her, swallowing everything but a starless sky, an infinite, violent black. And when it withdraws again, an instant later, the world is silent and the city is gone and she is alone in the woods. New Orleans, Louisiana, May 1st, 1984. 14. This is how it ends. With candles burning on the sill, unsteady light casting long shadows across the bed, with the blackest part of night stretching beyond the open window and the first blush of summer on the air, and Addie in Luke's arms, the darkness draped around her like a sheet. And this, she thinks, is home. This, perhaps, is love. And that is the worst part. She has finally forgotten something. Only it is the wrong thing. It is the one thing she was supposed to remember, that the man in the bed is not a man, that the life is not a life, that there are games and battles, but in the end, it is all a kind of war. A touch like teeth along her jaw, the darkness whispering against her skin.
My Adeline.
I am not yours, she says, but his mouth only smiles against her throat.
And yet, he says, we are together. We belong together.
You belong to me. Do you love me? She asks. His fingers trail along her hips.
You know I do.
Then let me go.
I'm not holding you here.
That isn't what I mean, she says, rising on one arm. Set me free.
He draws back, just enough to meet her gaze.
I cannot break the deal.
His head falls, black curls brushing her cheek.
But perhaps, he whispers against her collar, I could bend it.
Addie's heart thuds inside her chest.
Perhaps I could change the terms.
She holds her breath as Luke's words play along her skin.
I can make it better, he murmurs. All you have to do is surrender.
The word is a cold shock, a curtain falling on a play. The lovely sets, the stagings, the trained actors all vanish behind the darkened cloth. Surrender, an order whispered in the dark, a warning given to a broken man, a demand made over and over and over for years until it stopped. How long ago did he stop asking? But of course, she knows, it was when his method changed, when his temper toward her softened. And she is a fool. She is a fool for thinking it meant peace instead of war. Surrender.
What is it?
He asks, feigning confusion, until she throws the word back in his face. Surrender? She snarls.
It is just a word,
he says. But he taught her the power of a word. A word is everything, and his word is a serpent, a coiled trick, a curse.
It is the nature of things,
he says.
In order to change the deal,
he says. But Addie pulls back, pulls away, pulls free. Am I meant to trust you? To give in and believe that you will give me back? So many years, so many different ways of asking the same thing. Do you yield? You must think me an idiot, Luke. Her face burns with anger. I'm amazed you had the patience, but then you've always been fond of the chase. His green eyes narrow in the dark.
Adeline,
don't you dare say my name. She is on her feet now, singing with rage. I knew you were a monster, Luke. I saw it often enough, and yet I still thought, somehow I thought, after all this time. But of course, it wasn't love, was it? It wasn't even kindness. It was just another game. There is an instant when she thinks she might be wrong. A fraction of a moment when Luke looks wounded and confused, and she wonders if he meant only what he said, if... But then it is over. The hurt falls from his face, and it passes into shadow, the effect as smooth as a cloud across the sun. A grim smile plays across his lips.
And what a tiresome game it's been.
She knows she drew it out, but the truth still crashes through her. If she was cracked before, now she is breaking.
You cannot fault me for trying a different hand.
I fault you for everything. Luke rises, the darkness drawing into silk around him.
I have given you everything.
None of it was real! She will not cry. She will not give him the satisfaction of seeing her suffer. She will not give him anything ever again. This is how the fight begins. Or rather, this is how it ends. Most fights, after all, are not the work of an instant. They build over days or weeks, each side gathering their kindling, stoking their flames. But this is a fight forged over centuries. As old and inevitable as the turning of the world, the passing of an era, the collision of a girl and the dark. She should have known it would happen. Perhaps she did. But to this day, Addie doesn't know how the fire started. If it was the candles she swept from the table, or the lamp she tore from the wall. If it was the lights Luke shattered, or if it was simply a last act of spite. She knows she doesn't have the strength to ruin anything, and yet she did. They did. Perhaps he let her start the fire. Perhaps he simply let it burn. It does not matter in the end. Addie stands on Bourbon Street and watches the house go up in flames, and by the time the firefighters come, there is nothing left to save. It is only ashes. Another life gone up in smoke. Addie has nothing, not even the key in her pocket. It was there, but when she reaches for it, it is gone. Her hand goes to the wooden ring still at her throat. She tears it free, hurls the band into the smoking ruins of her home, and walks away. New York City, July 30th, 2014. 15. Addie is surrounded by trees, the mossy scent of summer in the woods. Fear winds through her, the sudden, horrible certainty that Luke has broken both rules instead of one, that he has dragged her through the dark, stolen her away from New York, abandoned her somewhere far, far from home. But then her eyes adjust, and she turns and sees the skyline rising above the trees and realizes she must be in Central Park. Relief sweeps through her. And then Luke's voice drifts through the dark.
"Adeline, Adeline," he says, and she cannot tell what is an echo and what is simply him, unbound by flesh and bone and mortal shapes.
"You promised," she calls.
"Did I?"
Luke steps out of the dark, the way he did that night, drawing together from smoke and shadow, a storm bottled into skin. "Am I the devil or the darkness?" he asked her once. "Am I a monster or a god?" He is no longer dressed in the sleek black suit, but as he was when she first summoned him, a stranger in trousers, a pale tunic open at his throat, his black hair curling against his temples. The dream conjured so many years ago. But one thing has changed. There is no triumph in his eyes. The color has gone out of them, so pale they're almost gray. And though she's never seen the shade before, she guesses it is sadness.
"I will give you what you want," he says. "If you will do one thing."
"What?" she asks. Luke holds out his hand.
"Dance with me,"
he says. There is longing in his voice and loss, and she thinks perhaps it is the end of this, of them. A game finally played out, a war with no winners. And so she agrees to dance. There is no music, but it does not matter. When she takes his hand, she hears the melody, soft and soothing in her head. Not a song, exactly, but the sound of the woods in summer, the steady hush of the wind through the fields. And as he pulls her close, she hears a violin, low and mournful, along the Seine. His hand slides through hers, and there is the steady murmur of the seaside, the symphony soaring through Munich. Addie leans her head against his shoulder and hears the rain falling in Vion, the brass band ringing in an L.A. lounge, and the ripple of a saxophone through the open windows on Bourbon. The dancing stops. The music fades. A tear slides down her cheek.
"All you had to do was set me free."
Luke sighs and lifts her chin.
"I could not.
Because of the deal.
Because you are mine."
Addie twists free. "I was never yours, Luke," she says, turning away. "Not in the woods that night, and not when you took me to bed. You were the one who said it was just a game."
"I lied."
The words a knife.
"You loved me," he says. "And I loved you."
"And yet," she says, "you didn't come to find me until I'd found someone else." She turns back toward him, expecting to see those eyes yellowing with envy. But instead, they have gone a weedy, arrogant green, mirrored by the expression on his face, the faint lift of a single brow, the corner of his mouth.
"Oh, Adeline," he says, "you think you've found each other?"
The words are a missed step, a sudden drop.
"Do you truly think I would let that happen?"
The ground tilts beneath her feet.
"That for all the deals I do, such a thing would ever pass beneath my notice?"
Addie squeezes her eyes shut, and she is lying beside Henry, their fingers laced together in the grass. She is looking up at the night sky. She is laughing at the idea that Luke finally made a mistake.
"You must have thought yourself so clever," he is saying now. "Star-crossed lovers brought together by chance. What are the odds that you would meet, that you would both be bound to me, both have sold your souls for something only the other could provide, when the truth is so much easier than that? I put Henry in your path. I gave him to you, wrapped and ribboned like a gift."
"Why?" she asks, throat closing around the word.
"Why would you do that?" "Because it's what you wanted. You were so set upon your need for love, you could not see beyond it. I gave you this. I gave you him, so you could see that love was not worth the space you held for it, the space you kept from me."
"But it was worth it. It is." He reaches out to brush her cheek.
"It won't be when he's gone."
Addie pulls away from his words, his touch.
"This is cruel, Luke, even for you."
"No," he snarls. "Cruelty would be 10 years instead of one. Cruelty would be to let you have a lifetime with him and have to suffer more for losing."
"I would choose it anyway," she shakes her head. "You never intended to let him live, did you?"
Luke inclines his head.
"A deal is a deal, Adeline, and deals are binding."
"That you would do all this to torment me?"
"No," he snaps. "I did it to show you, to make you understand. You put them on such a pedestal, but humans are brief and pale, and so is their love. It is shallow, it does not last. You long for human love, but you are not human, Adeline. You haven't been for centuries. You have no place with them. You belong with me."
Addie recoils, anger hardening to ice inside her.
"What a hard lesson it must be for you," she says, "that you can't have everything you want."
"Want?" he sneers. "Want is for children. If this were want, I would be rid of you by now. I would have forgotten you centuries ago," he says, a bitter loathing in his voice. "This is need, and need is painful, but patient. Do you hear me, Adeline? I need you, as you need me. I love you as you love me."
She hears the pain in his voice. Perhaps that is why she wants to hurt him worse. He taught her well to find the weakness in the armor.
"But that's the thing, Luke," she says. "I don't love you at all."
The words are soft, steady, and yet they rumble through the dark. The trees rustle, and the shadows thicken, and Luke's eyes burn a shade she's never seen before, a venomous color. And for the first time in centuries, she is afraid.
"Does he mean so much to you?"
he asks, voice flat and hard as river stones.
"Then go. Spend time with your human love. Bury him and mourn him and plant a tree over his grave."
His edges begin to blur into the dark.
"I will still be here," he says. "And so will you."
Luke turns away and is gone. Addie sinks to her knees in the grass. She stays there until the first threads of light seep into the sky, And then, at last, she forces herself up again, walks to the subway in a fog, Luke's words looping through her head.
You are not human, Adeline. You thought you found each other? You must have thought yourself so clever. Spend time with your love. I will still be here, and so will you.
The sun is rising by the time she gets to Brooklyn. She stops to pick up breakfast, a concession, an apology for staying away all night. And that is when she sees the paper stacked against the newsstand. That is when she sees the date stamped in the upper corner. August 6th, 2014. She left the apartment on the 30th of July. Spend time with your love, he said. But Luke has taken it. He didn't just steal a night, he took an entire week, 7 precious days erased from her life, and Henry's. Addie runs. She stumbles through the door and up the stairs, turns out her purse, but the key is gone, and she pounds on the door, terror surging through her that the world has changed, that Luke has somehow rewritten more than time, somehow taken more, taken everything. But then the lock slides, and the door falls open, and there is Henry, exhausted, disheveled, and she knows by the look in his eyes that he did not expect her to come back. That at some point between the first morning and the next, and the next, and the next, he thought she was gone. Addie throws her arms around him now. I'm so sorry, she says, and it is not just for the stolen week. It is for the deal, the curse, the fact it is her fault. I'm sorry, she says, over and over. And Henry doesn't shout, doesn't rage, doesn't even say, I told you so. He simply holds her tight and says, enough. Says, promise me. Says, stay. And none of them are questions, but she knows he is asking, pleading with her to let it go. To stop fighting, stop trying to change their fates, and just be with him until the end. And Addie cannot bear the thought of giving up, of giving in, of going down without a fight. But Henry is breaking, and it is her fault. And so, in the end, she agrees.